Yeah, I think we should probably do like an intro, like welcome to the Transitional Wisdom Podcast, the place where you come for all of your transitional information or transitional needs.
Welcome to Transitional Wisdom, the place you come for all your transitional needs.
With your host, Nash and Cody.
So here's our first attempt.
Welcome. My name is Cody, and I had phalloplasty, and so did Nash. And we are going to talk about that. We're not good at this yet. So, hi.
Hi.
Hi. We'll get better as this goes, right?
Yes. We're like fine wine.
Yes. Just bear with us. My name's Cody. That's all you need to know right now.
I am Nash, and also had phalloplasty, which we will get more into. Let's not spoil everything in the first few minutes.
Today we're going to talk about emotional prep for surgery or hormones or whatever your heart desires.
Yes, the mental and emotional prep that goes into, I mean, any surgery, but specifically trans surgeries and all of that. Yeah, let's discuss. So did you personally, did you prepare in any special way for like your top surgery?
That's a good way to start off the podcast. So, did I prepare in any special way for top surgery? I think emotionally I was ready because I'd been waiting for years to actually have it because I didn't have the funds for it in so long. And then finally it happened. I had the funds for it. And it was like a month later, I got my surgery scheduled. And I think the preparation mentally for that was like figuring out more, like my journey was way different where I wasn't on testosterone before top surgery. So I wasn't even out at all before top surgery.
How about to your family?
Now, well, kind of. But my mom like found out I was having top surgery about a week before. And it was like trying to navigate how I was going to tell people where I was going with my job. I didn't want to tell them what kind of surgery I was having. Obviously, I came out later. But at the time, it was terrifying. I didn't want anyone to know. And it's kind of funny because I feel like I don't know why I did it that way. I don't know why I was so terrified, but yeah, so it's weird that my top surgery journey was so private. And then now, like,
yeah,
everywhere, like I'm talking about my dick on the internet everywhere.
What do you think you were most afraid of?
I think I was just most afraid of what people would think or their perceptions, especially since I wasn't on testosterone yet. People thought, I think it was a little crazier. And they're just like, dude, you know, that's permanent, right? And you're just like, no shit. Yeah. So I feel like I was almost, it was more accepted once I started hormones, I think. And that's when I came out. But before it was very secret. So emotionally, I was just kind of on my own, but also ready because it's something that I'd wanted forever.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Did you, after you actually had the surgery, were you mentally, did you feel like there was anything you were struggling with? Or do you feel like I should have prepared for this, whatever this was, better?
I think what I wished I would have had prepared for better was being alone after surgery. It definitely was easier to fall into like a post-op depression. And it's funny because it doesn't matter what surgery you have or how happy you are afterwards. It's all the anesthesia, all the drugs. You just go through like a withdrawal. And so it kind of catches you off guard. So I wish that I would have had more friend visitations in place or just more ways to leave the house or get around. And it's hard if you're on your own.
Did your parents know when you had it?
Yeah. So they finally knew, and I was in my own apartment at this point. So I think my dad visited once. So it was pretty, my roommate had even moved out like a month earlier to live with her boyfriend. So it was like just me. It was crazy.
Wow. And then when did you actually start testosterone after surgery?
So I had surgery in September and I started testosterone in December. So it was like 3 months later. Yeah.
Kind of similar to you, but I was only on testosterone for, I don't even think it was 2 full weeks when I had my top surgery. Because what ended up happening was it was in September was when I finally like came out to Blair, my partner. And then after telling her, I was like, I can't tell anyone. I kind of like you, I was very like scared and very like ashamed and just feeling really alone, feeling really badly about myself. And And so I didn't really want to tell anyone how I was feeling. But then it was about a month later and I finally told my mom because we'd always been really close and I knew she very much could sense like something was going on. So I had told her. And then, you know, slowly between October and December, we told like the rest of my family and it was really hard for everyone to like, I think just figure out that it wasn't hard for them to accept what I was wanting to go through or what I was, you know, feeling and everything. The struggle that they had was how to tell other people, how are other people going to handle this? Like we didn't live in a great area in New Jersey where it's very open, you know, as a lesbian, as like a very butch androgynous looking lesbian, I got picked on all the time. I had nothing but problems living there. So that was their biggest concern. So with that being said, I kind of made an agreement that I would not start hormones or anything until I moved. And so from telling Blair in September to February, you know, almost however many months that is, 5, 6, nothing happened except for me going to therapy. And then when we moved, I had already set up doctor's appointment for hormones and a doctor's appointment for a consult for top surgery for like when we actually got there. So we moved February 28th. And I think March 6th was my testosterone appointment and March 7th was my consult. And I started testosterone within like a week or two of that appointment and then had my surgery like right after. So everything happened for me, I feel like, really quickly in the beginning. So mentally like preparing was kind of non-existent because in my head, it was like, I need this so badly that like, I'm not going to put much thought into anything else. I just need to get there and then the rest will figure it out. So my preparation was pretty minimal. And then I found afterwards, I really suffered by not preparing because unlike you, I don't have a very good body. I don't have like a sculpted body and stuff. I was already uncomfortable with how my body was in general, but then having the top surgery, it felt very mismatched for me because I had this like masculine chest like on the top. But then when you looked anywhere below that chest, it was like very soft and very like feminine looking, like still curvy, you know, that sort of thing. So I really struggled like the first year of hormones and, post-op that surgery just mentally because I just felt so uncomfortable. Just putting on clothes was really hard. And I spent like a lot of time just like staying inside or wearing like bigger clothes just to sort of feel comfortable slightly. You know, so that was like really hard. And I think that kind of taught me, I have to realize that these surgeries are not like an overnight success. You don't wake up the next day and you're like, hey, this is perfect. This is everything I wanted. I'm going to go live my life immediately now because of it. I think a lot of people was kind of fooled into believing that it would be like an overnight change.
I think with that one, that like, I mean, you could say, you know, it's not like an overnight success, but for me, it kind of was. I was just like, oh.
Yeah, but was that because of your body? Was that because of how much work you had already put into your body where it felt more aligned at that point?
I think, you know, I still felt the similar ways that you did where I still felt soft and things like that. But just being able to put on a shirt without like anything underneath, without having to deal with binding and all those sorts of things, like just having that relief was amazing. But it definitely pushed me to start testosterone as soon as possible because I might not have started testosterone until 3 months later, but I went to the doctor a lot sooner and she had to take some time to figure it out because she had never had a trans or FTM patient before. So she had to get like advice on how to start being on hormones like safely and all that stuff. So the time waiting was just because I was like waiting for my doctor to be able to start me.
I think it's interesting that you did have 3 months without hormones, but with a different body, so to speak. So I was definitely wondering if you've kind of experienced what I felt. But also for you, how you said it was an overnight success for you in a way. I don't want to take for granted like how I did feel afterwards. Cause I definitely, you know, like putting on a shirt, like what you just said, no longer having to wear a binder, obviously instant relief, hands down. But I think for the struggle for me was more of like when my shirt wasn't on or, you know, like when I was shirtless, those types of things where it just did not look right in my mind. It felt very like we took this human and just changed this one part of them, but the rest is the same still. So wanting so badly to like take my shirt off and look as masculine as internally I felt, you know, and that just wasn't there yet. And that's okay.
Yeah, totally. And I can feel that too, because like, I was really into CrossFit at the time, and it's kind of a thing with CrossFit. you get really sweaty in a workout and you take your shirt off. And my coach at the time, like, this was before I started like passing and stuff, and he would always be like, take your shirt off, take your shirt off. And I like didn't do it for the longest time until it was just me and like my friend in the gym. And it was really hard to do that until I started passing, because it was just felt like you said, you're like, it's a mismatch. So not necessarily for myself, but I was like more afraid to freak other people out, and that they're like, okay, what the hell?
That's a real thing. Like, that was one of the experiences I had, like, right after. So I had my surgery April 1st. It must have been only a month or so later that we went to Blair's parents' friend's lake house. And, you know, all the guys have their shirts off. They're going in the lake. They're swimming. They're doing whatever. And then I was sitting there like, all I want to do is take my shirt off and do the exact same thing they're doing. But my God, they're going to be freaked out. Like, they're going to be like, what is this body? Like, what's happening?
Yeah.
I really didn't do shirtless activities at all for probably the first year, just out of that discomfort.
You know, sometimes I wish to go back to CrossFit now and just be like totally comfortable with my body and be different. I've still not found that like sweet spot where you're like 100% comfortable. I think that after doing like bodybuilding, that definitely helped me feel more comfortable. So it's kind of like every summer I wonder, what's this summer going to be like? Am I going to be like just shirtless all the time? Or, you know, I pretty much missed last summer, so we'll see what happens this summer.
Right. I do wonder if being on the hormones longer allows for more comfort after you have top surgery. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you've been on hormones for a few years and then you have your top surgery, is there some sort of relief of maybe it is a little bit more of an overnight success of just like, oh yeah, this looks right now.
Maybe, but I think my biggest reason for having top surgery first is I didn't want to look like a guy with breasts.
That was my exact feeling. It was a concern for my own like mental health, that I thought that if I had started testosterone and, you know, body hair growth, all those very masculine changes, and then still having female chest, that it would just be way too damaging for me. So that was very much my reasoning.
Me too. And I think it also depends on your chest size going into it, because I was not small chested. I really was not. And it didn't matter how long I was going to be on hormones. I knew that there was not going to be any sort of shrinkage. So I was just like, no, these need to come off first, or else my dysphoria will just be like 10 times worse.
That's exactly how I felt. Yeah. So I think the order for me was probably the best thing I could have done, but it still was just, you know, should have been more like mental work put into how it was going to feel, kind of thing. Also with my hysterectomy, I had a very similar issue. So I had my hysterectomy in November 2016. I actually specifically chose to have my hysterectomy on election day because I was so scared of the outcome that I chose to literally be put under, literally be asleep for the entire event. So with that being said, though, I had gotten my fallow surgery date in August, and then I had my hysterectomy a couple months later that November. Because of having my fallow date, I honestly didn't even really remember I was having a hysterectomy. Leading up to the hysterectomy, there was not much thought of any of it. You know, what is this going to entail? How is this going to play out? You know, any of that stuff. And, you know, also from speaking to different people, unfortunately, everyone I spoke to told me the hysterectomy is super easy. It's easier than top surgery. You're going to be fine, you know, no problem, because I had a hard time with pain for top surgery. And so I kind of didn't put any thought into the hysterectomy. I was just like, this is a routine surgery. You know, many people get it. I'm just going to go in and it's going to be fine. And I went in with feeling that way. And then I had like major complications with the hysterectomy. And that was really, really hard to come away from, because I felt very angry at myself for thinking it was going to be such a breeze and not putting more work with myself into it, of just being in like a stable place with it, or being aware of like what could happen. Cause I didn't really think there could be any complications. You know, I thought it was pretty standard, like easy procedure. And my surgeon literally sewed my urethra shut. I could not empty my bladder. Like, I don't think something more ridiculous could have happened than what did happen. So I came out of my hysterectomy. I was done at like 1 o'clock, and they called Blair, told her everything was fine. And they said, as soon as I urinated, they would discharge me. it took me about 6 hours before they finally realized I wasn't able to urinate despite how much water they were giving me. So I had to have another emergency surgery because they couldn't get a catheter in because my urethra was closed. So, you know, I think that if my hysterectomy was routine, so to speak, and didn't have any complications, maybe my lack of mental prep wouldn't have been such an issue. But with the complication I had, I was in the hospital for 2 days.
I wouldn't even call that a complication. I'd call that just like...
Yeah, what do you even call it? A doctor screw up? Like
a mistake.
A mistake. Doctor error. Due to doctor error, I was kept in the hospital for 2 days. And then also, this could be literally a whole episode on its own, but like, so I'm in this hospital room. After I come out of the histo, they put me in a room and I'm next to another trans guy who also just had a hysterectomy with the same doctor. And his mom is there. And I'm, just to be frank, I'm literally screaming and crying in pain. The most I think that pain honestly was a little bit worse than fallow, but it obviously lasted a shorter amount of time. But this mom, who I didn't even know, I was completely alone because Blair was on her way back. And so I'm in this hospital room alone, crying and screaming in pain. And this mom comes over to me and she's like, would it be okay if I hugged you and held your hand? I just want to comfort you. And I said, yeah, absolutely. And she literally sat there with me, with her son on one side of the curtain, me right next to her, holding my hand and rubbing my back, trying to soothe me, waiting for Blair to get there. Now, just to really quick, just to explain, there also was a shooting in Seattle the day that I had my hysterectomy. So Blair couldn't even get back to the hospital for hours.
Wait, is this a Grey's Anatomy episode or is this real life?
This is real life, but it literally should be a Grey's Anatomy episode. After I tell you this one part, we'll go to the next so that we don't take up too much of my time. But I just need to share. Not only did all that happen, but then I literally had five nurses around me holding my legs wide open. Two were holding my legs open while the other three, yes, I want to make sure everyone understands, there were three nurses trying to get a catheter inside me. No one could do it. And I was in so much pain, they would not listen to me. They had to call a doctor in because I said, no one touch me. If anyone else touches me, I'm suing all of you. Like, no one touch me. They finally got the doctor in and the doctor looked down at me, looked up and goes, we have to go into surgery right now. And I looked at her and I said, there is no reason it should have taken someone this long to realize that. So then I went into surgery. Whatever. So mental preparation for me would have been really helpful there because there was no like coping mechanisms for me that were working at this point. Gosh. I had no idea what was happening.
Oh my gosh.
It was extremely screwed up. Share with us yours now.
Oh man. All right. So my histo experience. Definitely quite the opposite of yours. Okay. So first of all, in the process of getting a histo, right, this was actually the doctor I went to was my second opinion doctor because the first doctor that I went to was very inexperienced when it came to trans patients, which I wish they would just say that. Basically, the guy wanted to stick to what he knew, which was like the open abdominal, you know, they just open you up and take everything out that way, and which is way more painful, way more recovery.
Yeah.
And he told me that since I haven't had kids and since I've been on testosterone, that my vaginal walls were going to be too narrow and he wouldn't be able to pull things out that way if he did it laparoscopically. And I was just like, that's nonsense. Like almost every trans guy I know has had it laparoscopically and they were fine. So I emailed my doctor, told her what happened. She's like, let's get you to another doctor. So I went to another one. She was amazing. Like she just knew absolutely every way to make you feel comfortable, even as like a trans guy. And she did the robotic laparoscopic one, the Da Vinci. And so surgery was really awkward because none of the nurses were giving me the right name and pronouns, and it was really weird. But I think because of the nature of surgery, they just got really confused. So expect some confusion in that one. Then after that, like everything went well. The pain level upon waking up was actually pretty bad. It was like really crampy. I think the first thing I said was like, I don't want to trigger anybody, you know?
Yeah, I know where you're going with it.
Yeah, it's like, I have cramps. Okay, so that wasn't the biggest deal. And then they told me, you know, once I pee, I can go home. And it took me a really, really long time to pee. Like, basically, I had, like, a last chance try. until I was getting a catheter. So, but I did end up being able to pee, thank God. And then I went home, and then the first couple days are the worst, but it wasn't even that bad. Like, it felt like I'd done like a million crunches, whatever. And after that, it was smooth sailing, like no complications, super easy. I was ready to lift weights already, like after the first week. And so if every surgery...
True Cody fashion.
Yes. So if every surgery could go that way, that would be awesome.
Yeah. You had an easier time with that for sure.
But I've got less good stories, so I don't know about that.
I guess it's a trade-off, huh? I did have a similar experience with the name and the pronouns thing too in the hospital. So my name was all legally changed, but at the time that I had my hysterectomy, my gender marker was legally changed, but like on my license and everywhere except for on my insurance card, whatever. So it still said female on there. And the reason for that was to get my insurance company to still cover my hysterectomy. So at the hospital, my tag says my name, my male name, whatever. The tag itself says male because they put it on there for me. But as soon as they had to take me into the emergency surgery, every nurse, she. I'm not somebody who gets too upset by those things easily just because I don't know why. I think I just try to give everybody the benefit of the doubt, like as much as possible. Because I do understand it is hard to sort of like flip on to a certain pronoun if you're just totally not used to it. So I try to give them the benefit of the doubt, but with the amount of pain I was in, I just lost it. And I was like, if any of you call me she again, just get out of my face. Like I couldn't deal with it. And you know, I'm not a mean person.
No.
So you know, it had to take, like, I was obviously in a lot of pain to get me to that point, but I just lost it on them. I did learn just this last month at CPMC. I learned that the main issue with the pronoun thing internally at the hospital is even if all of your stuff says, you know, male, if that's how you identify, or female, whatever, if you weren't born that way, they have to put it in the paperwork because of the internally the way our bodies are, they have to have some indicator that we were not born the way that we're identifying now. Because like the nurse was telling me for like just last month with my fallow stuff, she was saying if they didn't know, like if somebody didn't know that I had phalloplasty, or, you know, why I was there for a staph infection, and they thought I was just, you know, a cis male who had a staph infection, you know, where his urethra was, she said that there could be a lot of issues with how they handled it. So like they have to keep, you know, female on certain documents or whatever. So that to me made sense. Like, you know, while of course I want every trace of my, you know, female life before to be completely erased, it's not safe in some ways. And so I think it's like important. It felt very good for me to know that, because I felt like it was less of a sort of like a condescending or a mocking type of thing. And it was for my safety more than it was anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, CPMC is a Sutter medical facility, and I'm with the Sutter group, and the way that they do things when it comes to seeing different doctors, or, you know, it's all electronic. It's all in their MySetter Health online thing. So it's kind of interesting that as soon as they flip your gender marker, it not only changes your present pronouns gender marker, but it changes it all on your past documents. It's kind of crazy.
Interesting.
But it does in every single, if they look at your chart, it's easy to see that you're trans, because it says, because you're diagnosed with gender dysphoria.
Right.
And it says all your procedures, like hysterectomy, et cetera, et cetera. And so if they do look at your chart, they should know. So it's kind of like, because your whole history is there, but I don't know how it differs if you're not like a Sutter patient.
So she was saying that because my first visit with CPMC, my health insurance was still female. So now that, even though it's changed to male, she said basically my file has two files. I have my file prior to changing my health insurance with my birth name and birth gender. And then I have another file attached to it, which has my updated name and gender. And so they keep it all together so that, you know, if they had to quickly like do some sort of emergency thing or whatever, it's all in one spot. So that's how she was explaining the reason for the stuff in the computer and whatnot, which, you know, again, I understand that for like safety wise, they obviously have to, you know, keep records of these things. But yeah, unfortunately, I don't think it's that way everywhere.
Totally. At the same time, you know, like you said, you kind of understand at the point of it being for your own safety, like why they would put those things. Because I would, when it comes to any sort of medical emergency, like even in my phone, it has transgender. And a lot of people think like, oh, there's no reason mm-hmm. for you to have that in there. You should be treated just like any other patient. But it's like, if I need a catheter, if I need any sort of surgery, it's going to have to be known that my plumbing is a little different. Like, don't fuck with my urethra because I'll kill you. I will cut you.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Dr. Chen, he mentioned it to me because of the embolisms I had after my phalloplasty, but he mentioned getting a medical ID tag saying, you know, the embolisms, but also saying catheter must be placed with a camera because of the reconstructed urethra with phalloplasty. I think a lot of times, like, we really want to try to shut out all the past, but, like, it's not safe for us to do that in these medical situations. I know it's, like, obviously not easy for us to do that, but...
Yeah, it's not easy. It's hard to think that, like, you can't ever erase your past or whatever, but I think you just have to... like roll over, accept it, come to terms with it, and just know that it's for your best interest.
Exactly. Exactly. Unless they're, you know, outright being rude or disrespectful of that way. You know, I have found, at least at this hospital here in California, that they really try to do their absolute best.
Yeah. Even after, especially after you have certain surgeries, for example, I had knee surgery and I was like, sweet, I don't even have to say that I'm trans. Like, it doesn't matter. It's my knee. It's far away from my genitals. But then I had to have an MRI. And then they started freaking out because I have Clipsol in my body. So they had to look up my chart. They had to look up the surgery report to see what kind of clips. Didn't really say what kind of clips. So they had to do an X-ray of my pelvic area. So, like, of course, you know, I just have to always out myself no matter what. You never know what's going to be weird. And so luckily it was fine. But if I hadn't said anything and those metal clips were going to cause an issue, I could have been injured.
Yeah, there could have been a lot of problems. I do the same thing. Whenever I go, I out myself just so that it's, you know, with the doctors, I mean, I out myself just so that it's like, you know where my body's coming from. You know what is inside, you know, to an extent, you know what's inside this body. It might make the best decision with that information. Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to be able to find a level of comfort with ourselves to be able to do that, because you just never know when leaving something so minor out could, you know, change your whole outcome.
I keep laughing because I picture, okay, so the technician was like, do you want to see your X-ray? I was like, yeah, sure. So she brought me over to where the X-ray was on the screen, and you just see like... these, like, you see my dick and like just, and I'm just I felt so exposed.
Oh my god. But it's kind of cool that you were able to see that body part of yours on like a medical thing like that, like, to you know, how much more real did it feel to you at that point?
Yeah, I was like, well, there it is.
Yeah. Like, because I remember you and I would often talk about, like, some joking but some serious in the beginning of like, oh my god, is our junk gonna fall off? Like, is it, are we sure it's secure on there? Like, you know, I think it's a normal anxiety that a lot of people experience after these surgeries. But I think, I don't know, for me, I imagine if I saw an X-ray like that, I'd be like, it's securely on and it's not going anywhere. This is fantastic.
Yep.
So why don't we talk about with phalloplasty? Do you wanna dive in there?
Yeah.
So my process of preparing for fallow was probably the most I've done for like anything in my life. So I really spent, I had my surgery consult in June, and then my surgery was not until the following April. So, you know, just under a year. So I pretty much spent those months doing everything possible to prepare, which for me looked like a lot of guided visualizations. Those helped me a lot to just be in like a more positive space. So I did a lot of that. I did a lot of like journaling about feelings and just my outlook, you know, what I was hoping for, those types of things. And I made sure to do that, you know, every day, like as much as I could, almost every day. And then the other kind of big things I did was just focusing on really like surrounding myself with the most positive people that I could, positive and supportive people. I had like, I called them like my support squad, which you got added to after we met, but
Yes.
Yeah. But my support squad, you know, was Blair, my partner, and then I had my three best friends that were like my support team. In my mind, they're all very different but very similar people. So they each had like strengths in how they could support me. You know, one might be better at talking me through things, one might be better at calming me down, or one might be better at advice, whatever it was. Kind of ahead of time, I had conversations with them on just like, I don't know what I'm going to need, but I just need to know if you can kind of fulfill this role for me and like in a bad time kind of thing. And so that was, I think that was one of the best things I did for myself, was just having that, because then in those moments where, you know, complications arise or just the pain is too much and you're really struggling, I didn't have to put so much thought into, okay, who can I call for help right now, for like emotional help, you know, or who can I text right now to distract me, you know? And so I already had those answers, you know, I knew who to contact. And yeah, like I said, I think that was one of the best things I did, was just having that like set up ahead of time. Yeah, just a lot of, I don't like calling it therapy, but a lot of like self-awareness and like just talking about what I was feeling in the moments leading up to surgery and what I was, I guess just having plans of how I was going to kind of handle the things afterwards, like emotions or any problems and stuff like that. And just being very aware of the possibility of complications, you know, and knowing that those things could arise. And the one thing I did not know was how long they can last for, or how daunting they really could be.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was kind of like, I don't know, sometimes the way, so I'm a really anxious person. So sometimes the way that I don't get anxiety is almost by not preparing, but like in the weirdest way possible. So like sometimes I have to just jump basically. And I feel like a phalloplasty in a lot of ways was kind of like a jump situation, which sounds horrible because it's such a big decision. But it's like, I made the decision to jump. So I was like, okay, I'm doing this because I'm scared, but it's what I need to do. And I can't live with myself just wondering like, what if, you know? So it's just like, I had to do this. And I think what it was most important for me at the time was, you know, not hanging around with people that gave me anxiety, or not being, well, let's just be real, and not being in a relationship, because I can't, no. So I've been single for every one of my surgeries.
That's good though. Yeah, I mean, but you've done well with it.
Yeah. I think it's really the only way I can do it, but
that's good to be aware of.
Yeah. Because I just worry so much about the relation, or like the other person, that freaks me out. So, yeah. So not being around people who make me anxious, or just kind of not putting myself in situations that make me anxious, and, focusing on what, you know, coping mechanisms or what helps me. So at the time I was like working out a lot as usual, but making sure that I really made time for myself pre-phalloplasty, and then just doing absolutely everything I could to be in the healthiest mindset possible. And, you know, there's a lot of things that you can't really control with phalloplasty, and that comes with insurance problems or referral problems or getting certain things approved, and it's a lot of waiting game. So really the waiting game is the hardest for me. And of course, being an anxious person, I did think of complications. I thought of the absolute worst case scenario. So I feel like going in, I was almost like, okay, this isn't going as bad as I thought it was going to go. I was like, okay, so my penis hasn't fallen off. The blood flow is still there. I don't have a stricture yet. That did come later. I was all intact for the most part. So it was, you know, sometimes maybe anxiety helps. I don't know.
Right. Would you say that, in a sense, you prepared for fallow by not preparing?
Yeah.
Right? So I feel like for you, because of like the anxiety that you suffer from, it almost sounds like you not knowing any of the possibilities of what could happen, or, you know, only knowing some maybe, was a lot easier for you to deal with going into the surgery versus me, where I wanted to know everything, because like in my head, if I know everything, I can be positive enough to like work against that, to make that not happen. So we kind of did the opposite.
Basically, what I always figured was, I will go into surgery, mm-hmm. and I got 6 days in the hospital to figure shit out. And it's going to be a test of what the pain is like, what I'm going to have to do. You know, I'm going to see the doctor a few times while I'm in there so I can ask questions, you know. So, you know, I saw Dr. Chen for like 2 minutes for my pre-op because he wasn't even supposed to be there, but he just popped in real fast. So I was just like, oh, unexpected surprise. But like, it just felt like, okay, it's here to go. But really, that's how I've always really done things. It's kind of like, if it makes me anxious, I jump in blind, but like, not completely, because I don't recommend that. But at the same time, like, whatever works for you.
Yeah, well, I think this is a good thing to touch on, that the way I prepared was very different from the way you prepared. And what worked for you wouldn't necessarily work for me, and vice versa.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So this is kind of a weird analogy, but I was a skateboarder growing up, and you know, there's a lot of scary things when it comes to skateboarding. Like, there's all these potential possibilities that you could fall in all sorts of different ways. But if it's like you're approaching this, say it's like a 12 stair, and you're like, okay, this could be really bad. But once you commit to it, you better commit to it, or you're just going to get worse. So it's kind of like I made this commitment to phalloplasty, to take the leap, and I knew that, you know, there's the potential of things going wrong, but like, I didn't want to think about that. I just wanted to focus on getting it done.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. It's a good way to compare it to something like that. I felt like I really spent like those 9 or 10 months, whatever it was, every day of my life was just, there was at least an hour or two where I focused on like the emotional side of like preparing for this. And so it's interesting to like hear, you know, somebody I know, you, who did something so differently, and that, you know, I feel like our recoveries were pretty similar, at least until September when you had the urethroplasty.
Yeah.
But I think it was like up until that point, we had pretty similar outcomes or pretty similar feelings and concerns and stuff like that. So it's interesting how we came from two totally different spaces and still kind of came out in the similar way.
Yeah, for sure.
Something Dr. Chen said was, even if the positivity doesn't make the difference, don't take the risk of not being positive through these surgeries. Because if you take that risk, that's where you're losing out on being a success. But if you stay positive, what's the harm? Like, even if you're positive and happy and you still face a complication,
right?
Like, what's the harm? Is the positivity hurting you? No. So it's like, it's important to focus on that part. You know what I mean? Does that make sense? I'm not sure if I was...
You know, yeah. It's kind of like, why go through your life just being like negative about everything? Because that's all wasted energy, and things are going to happen the way they happen. So you might as well just be happy about it.
Exactly. Like, the negativity is not going to make positive things happen, but the positivity can make positive things happen.
Right.
So why risk continuing a negative path when you know damn well 100% of the time the negativity is not going to get you anywhere?
Right. That about covers it. I think like it just doesn't seem real up until like the day before, and you're just like, oh God, it's real now.
That was definitely something that I felt too. Like I knew it was coming, obviously, but then, you know, the days leading up, you're like, okay, it's coming. I'm so excited. But then it's like the day before and you're like, holy shit, this is happening tomorrow. You know, like just what?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And I do remember at the last second, like that morning of being like, oh my God, I don't think I prepared at all for this. I think when it comes down to that, those final moments, like everything flashes before your eyes.
I'm so weird when I get into, okay, so when it comes to surgery, it's like, I don't know, like something just flips a switch and I'm just like, all right, let's do this.
You work well under pressure, I think.
I guess so.
I think you do.
Like, I might get like really nervous anticipating things, but like when the day comes and it's like ready to be like, you're there, I'm like, okay. Yeah. I think the initial, like after phalloplasty, I do have a little bit more of like this, I cannot stand the smell of hospitals when walking into them. I cannot stand it. So that definitely takes a little bit. It just like automatically puts me back in that spot. But like for my knee surgery, even then I was just like, oh God, I hate the smell of this. I hate how this IV makes my mouth taste. I hate like when they flush it and it's bleh.
Yeah.
But I mean, but then getting past that point and it's like, it's fine.
Yeah, I had similar feelings too. Just even this last month going into the hospital, just going to the ER, I was like, I'm going to throw up. I can't stand the smell. It was just a very triggering scent.
Yeah. And it's weird because it's like, it's not like I have any bad memories per se for being, it was just like a really weird time, like a lot of pain. You're not really in control of anything. So I think that's just kind of where that comes from. And I know even when I was working in the kitchen, we have sanitizer water, and even the sanitizer water smelled like the hospital. And I was just like, I couldn't do it. Like it smells like a hospital. Ugh.
Well, it's funny for me because I don't know about you, but like I didn't ever even had surgery until my top surgery. That was my first surgery ever. Really, like not having any idea what to expect. You know, surgery hurts. You're going to be in pain. Okay, duh. But you don't really understand what that means until you have also had, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be top surgery, but until you've also experienced what surgery feels like, you just don't know what, you know what I mean? Like I had no idea that little things, like I didn't know I couldn't sleep on a certain angle, or, you know, I'd be stuck on my back for so many months. And just to kind of circle back to mental, like to the emotional mental prep, that's something I was not prepared for. And it's, in some ways, it's more emotionally uncomfortable than it is physically, because just not, you know, something that I always cherished was the sense of like relief and comfort and safety I felt with like laying in my own bed. So, you know, just like after a long day or laying in my bed and just like, just relaxed. It's not the same now. I don't feel that way. I lay in bed and I'm like, all right, I got to find something some comfortable way to lay and get through till the morning and then find another comfortable place in the house. So I think that's something I really wish that I knew a little bit more of, just because it's like, it's such a hard thing to swallow, like that you can't even get comfortable in your own bed.
Yeah, no, that was really hard for me, sleeping, and that just totally sucked. And I think, you know, on top of not really being able to get in a comfortable position for forever, I think one of the weirdest parts that no one really talks about when it comes to surgery is going under. The anesthesia, like, it's not a bad feeling per se. It's just kind of like, for me, I've kind of related it to this feeling of like, is this what death feels like? Because you're just completely lights out. Like, you're not in control. And I'm one of those persons who, like, they'll tell me, all right, we're going to put you to sleep now. And I'm like, no, you're not. Like, I pretend that I can actually control it. And I don't even remember falling asleep. And it's just like, how weird is that? That,
yeah,
like, it makes me a little depressed, I think, every time coming out of it, because it's just like, I can't control when I die. Like, I just think about that every single time. It's just like, I can't control being put to sleep. I can't control when I die. Like, this is what death is going to feel like. And then don't think like that.
The reason I'm smiling and laughing listening to you is because I literally have the exact opposite feeling. I love when they put me to sleep right beforehand. I feel like it's like the most relaxing thing. Like, everybody's so sweet and so nice. And like, they're always telling me like, everything's going to go perfectly. Don't worry. Just let us do our job. You know, just totally like comforting. And I'm like, yes, this is my favorite part. It's my favorite part because of the positivity. But also, it's just, I think to me, it symbolizes like when I wake up, things are going to be okay. I look forward to the aftermath of waking up from that. So therefore, I think I like the falling asleep because of what it means.
It is kind of like this weird, like, kind of like happy feeling, because you're just like, peace out, world. I'm going to another place. But like, when you wake up, that's when it hits you of like, oh my God.
All right. That's it for today's episode. And hopefully that was helpful for people. Thank you for joining us. We look forward to sharing with you again on the next episode. If anyone has any questions or feedback or anything they'd like to share or any topics that they want us to cover, please feel free to message us or email us. And we would be happy to try and make that work.
And please subscribe so you don't miss any more future episodes.